Oh my goodness, wait a minute. Let me get myself together.
There you go. There you go.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Let me cut this other thing off. I have this headphone thing. I want to cut that off.
How okay. Do I sound? Can you hear me?
Yeah, let me just cut these headphones off.
Okay.
I don't want to use these.
Yes. Modern technology. We are here at Celebrity Showcase with Greg Hill as he tributes to Delphonics. We're also live on blogtalkradio.com/HearNoEvil Radio Show. So if you guys want to call in, make sure you do. You can call in right now and speak to Greg and me, 516-453-9097. Greg, it is such a pleasure to see you, to hear from you. And listen, tell my viewing audience a little bit about who you are and how and what got you into the music industry.
Well, what got me into the music industry is just simply my love of music, just like, you know, everyone else. And it's just that's my thing. Just music.
And go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead.
No. You were about to say something, probably what I was about to ask you about what was your first experience like?
Well, at a young age, the first group that I really heard, I was in New Jersey at my relative's house, and somebody put on an album, Earth, Wind, and Fire. Mm-hmm. Reasons, Shining Star, and that was it for me. So,
well, listen, I think that was a great song, Reasons. Everybody tried to hit those notes, even me.
Not me.
So you got influenced by I guess it was the tenor voice, or was it Mike? What was the guy with the tenor voice with the braids? Was it him?
Philip Bailey. No. It was just the entire production. The whole production was just unbelievable, and I never heard anything like that before in my life.
They were so self-contained.
Yeah, that had a great impact on me, and You know, took it from there.
So once you got influenced by that, what was your route? Take us through the process of your entertainment career.
Well, my route was, I'm trying to think, you know, I'm not as young as I used to be, child, you know, listen. Well, I started playing bass. I picked up a bass guitar at an early age. And then my mother put me and my sisters in the Harlem Schools of the Arts. And at that time, I really didn't appreciate it. I didn't understand what it was. I was in like elementary school. I had to go Tuesdays, Thursdays, and all day Saturday. So I just didn't get it. I didn't understand it. Took little piano lessons, violin, everything. And but now I understand, because I guess she saw something in me way back then. So from there, you know, I was playing bass and whatnot, and, you know, in local groups and playing with a little bit this one, a little bit that one. And it's so much. But just to make a long story short, I played with Teddy for a little while, you know, over there at the rooftop.
He had Teddy Riley?
Yes. I forgot the name of the band. I forgot the name of the band. A friend of mine, Ralph Vargas, which he was a drummer for New Edition, he hooked me up with that gig. For a little while, I was in there for a little while with them, but that was one of my.
Was this when they were new Kids at Work?
No, I think he already did Kids at Work. I'm not sure. Oh, he had a group. He had a band called Atlantis.
Oh,
and this was we used to rehearse at the rooftop up in the bar, the upstairs in the private bar. Mm-hmm. We used to rehearse up there. And so, I was with that for a little while, but then I still don't know what happened with that. You know, these guys, everybody in and out. And then after that, one of the major things I had worked with the New Edition organization for quite a while. And that
and what
was that.
Capacity? Were you singing or playing?
No, I was a roadie.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Okay.
And that was, you know, I saw some, it was an eye-opening experience. And so that was that. And then so many things, but some of the things that stick out in my mind, I had a group called The Concept, and we signed the deal with Capitol Records back in, I think it was 89, 90, something like that. And I had got together with, I don't know if you remember, my mind is just, I got to take my Nereva or whatever to keep it going. You know, Victor Bailey.
Okay.
He produced, he was Weather Report's bass player.
Okay.
He played for a bunch of major cats, and he also produced a few of the hits for Force MDs.
Uh-huh.
Besides many other things he did. I had got together with him and we was working on some stuff, and he gave us the first single off the album, which was called Homegirl. And it was cool, but the label, you know, from where I saw it, the label didn't get behind it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that went on for a while. We did the album, we had a 3-album deal, but these guys decided to do something that I was not really for, but you know how back in the day, and this was back in the New Jack Swing era. This is back in the days when people used to run up in the record labels and demand that I want this, or you know, you're gonna release us from this contract, or we're gonna do this and do that. And so they had some people go up in there and get us out of our contract. And so needless to say, that was not a good thing, because we was trying to get something going elsewhere. You know, it's a small world. It's a small world, small business, small industry. So we was kind of blackballed. So that's how that went. Then moving fast forward, I wound up with Will Hart. He was one of the original Delphonics. And as the second tenor, started going out on the road with him. And that was another experience. What's that you drinking? What you drinking?
Since I've had some heart conditions, I've been making my own drinks. So no. This is a banana with strawberry, pineapple, and mango with a splash of ginger.
Okay. All right. I hear you. Carry on, sister. Carry on. Do what you got to do.
Listen, that's what I got to do, because that stuff that they selling out there is fake, it's full of sugar, this is natural.
Okay.
And, you know, you won't get bumps on your face, you know, because I'm still paying at my age. So, you know.
I hear you.
Yeah.
But okay. So,
now, from your experience and being on the road with all of these different groups, you find yourself more comfortable in a group setting as opposed to a solo artist?
Absolutely. I was never really a solo artist. I mean, way back in the day, I had a manager, a guy named Matthew Turner.
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing the solo thing back then. And, you know, that wasn't for me. I even knew it back then, but it's what was going on at the time. So I just kind of went with it. Mm-hmm. But I'm not really a soloist. The group situation. In fact, the singing thing was just never my thing. I'm a musician, but it just so happens that I can hold a note. So I got pulled into the group situation.
So now you mentioned earlier that you went to Harlem School of the Arts. Are you originally from Manhattan or New York?
No, born and raised in the Bronx, Third Avenue.
Okay, because I know you do a lot of stuff in Jersey, And so I just was assuming you were from Jersey for some reason.
No, I lived in Jersey for a while, in second marriage.
Okay, okay.
Don't get me started, okay? Yeah.
But, listen, we go through things. So your mom put you in homeschool of arts, and that's where you probably learned music theory. Did they teach you notation and all of that stuff?
Yes, yes.
You see? Which is rare nowadays because the schools have taken art and music and art away from the children. So a lot of these guys don't really know anything about musicianship. So that's why they sample a lot, because they don't know how to play instruments. And that's very important. And that's what helped you. That, you know, you see, like, from that beginning, early stages of learning music, how it gave you the confidence to play an instrument. Like, that's rare. That's not something very easy to do. And then to be able to sing with people that are known, that's a blessing.
Yeah, it's definitely a blessing. It's definitely a blessing. It's an experience. It's an experience.
So what was it like singing in a group that, first of all, have the most iconic love songs in the history?
It was one of the greatest experiences ever to me, because I never thought that, I thought that I would be on stage playing behind folks like that, you know, at the time. But when I found myself at the front, three of us in front of thousands of people singing, stepping, dancing, every single show, before I go out, I would just close my eyes and say, you know, I'm just so blessed to be able to do this. But there's always a but in there.
Uh-oh.
Thing is, there's the show in front of the curtain, and then there's the show behind the curtain. You know, I don't know if I can curse on your podcast.
Can.
But it's a lot of shit that goes on behind the scenes that if you do not understand, you know, some people just do not believe the stuff that goes on with some of these artists and how these people act.
Can you give an example?
Well, what's a good
example? But I'm mentioning names.
Yeah, no, I'm not mentioning any names, but you know, they you know, when you lie to people and tell them, okay, I'm charging you $10,000 for us with the band, one night stand, and you don't tell anybody, and when we get off the plane, the promoter's asking, so where's the band? And you say, oh, the band's coming on the next flight, and we're looking like, what band?
Oh, wow.
And come showtime, it's like, well, there's no band, so I'm gonna have to cut your money. And this person actually said, well, if you don't give me the money we agreed upon, we're not going on stage. So it's not my gig. It's not my contract. So there's nothing I can really do about it except stand there and say, what the hell is going on here? And this is a lot of what I saw, a lot of sneakiness, a lot of conniving, or, you know, promises, lies. And so eventually I had to make a move and do my own thing.
Wow.
And, you know, that's you know, and my story simply is just, I was told that what I'm doing right now, I would never survive. No one would ever book my group. We're not good enough, blah, 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 blah. I've been working for 21 years.
Wow.
Period. So, you know, so that's where I'm at right now.
Now, is it easy to book shows?
Well, for me, honestly, it's a rare occasion when I have to pick up the phone and call people and say, can you book me? My phone rings because I do proper business. People feel comfortable calling me. They don't, they'll get on the phone. I'll be on the phone with a promoter for an hour and a half. talking to them about how to show, how we're going to promote it, how, because I try to help out with everything that I do. I don't just say, okay, give me this, give me that, and I'll see you at Showtime. I try to help them promote the event, you know, try to put it out there and let people know where we're going to be so they can make their ticket sales, so they can pay us without, you know, me having them turn them upside down and hold their pockets, you know.
Do so people still have to do that?
I haven't had too many of those experiences. Mm-hmm. Not me. I haven't, because most of the time, everything has worked out. And if it didn't, chances are I wasn't doing the show. You know, but there are times that my money was shorted. Mm. There are times that there's some people where you can obviously see that they did not promote the event properly. So when you look into the audience, you see in a 400 seater, 100 seats taken. So now, you know something went wrong.
So now when that happens, of course, I'm almost certain you get your advance money. But what happens? Is the promoter still obligated to pay you?
Yes, they're obligated. But in this business, for most of my time, we have operated on what they call the Chitlin Circuit. Uh-huh. We work a lot of the Chitlin Circuit. We don't do, there are, you got the Delphonics. You got, you know, several groups that go out there and sing Delphonic songs. Let me just put it that way. Mm. But we do some nice clubs,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes we do some large venues, like we do up there in Long Island. We do a lot of shows, mm-hmm. and a lot of promoters that we deal with are what they call the Chitlin Circuit promoters, okay. smaller venues and stuff like that. Which, by the way, I love to do the smaller venues because the people are right there. You're right there.
Right.
And, you know, I'm kind of like a people person when mm-hmm. I'm on stage. You know, I like to talk and laugh and joke, you know, so, yeah.
Wow.
But,
now, how often are you on the road?
How often? Well, we're getting ready to go back. We're getting ready to hit the road, April 15th, I think?
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be in Philadelphia.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And, so how often, like, do you do, like, weekend shows? And do you do shows with other iconic groups?
Yes. From time to time, we have worked with this one, that one. You know, we've worked with Melissa Morgan. We've worked with Howard Hewitt. We've worked with the Blue Magic. You know. We work with a lot of groups. In fact, that's another part of what I do. I manage quite a few acts myself also.
Oh.
Yeah, so you know, that's because honestly, a lot of people used to look at me like I was crazy back in the day. I would tell a lot of people that, you know, this music, in order for this music to continue on, these guys, these original members, they're getting old.
Mm.
They're not doing it the way they used to, sitting on stools. Right? A lot of them are retiring, or they've, God forbid, passing on.
Yeah. It's
somebody has to carry this music on because people still want to hear this music. The fans still want to hear that music. So that's why I started my Soul One Entertainment group, where we basically get ex-members of groups,
mm-hmm.
and we put a group around them and we start booking them.
Wow.
You know, so that's what we do. So right now I got about 5 or 6 acts, and we have different packages that we send out. And that's what that is. It's not an easy thing because I get a lot of resistance from, of course, from the originals. You know, people just don't like me because I'm doing this, you know. So I mean, it's just business. It's not nothing right. personal, but people take it real personal, and they come at me kind of crazy, and that's okay because I'm kind of crazy too. So we all right, we good. Don't matter.
How does the music industry or your musical career affect your personal life?
Oh my God, this is kind of taking over everything. I mean, I have a personal life. I have kids, family, everything. But it's like, this is like a 24-hour situation that I'm in, because I'm dealing with not only my group, which is, by the way, Greg Hill tribute to the Delphonics, because right now, I can't say too much about it, but I'm going through a lawsuit right now.
Wow.
Some legal stuff. But I can say that my group is now Greg Hill tribute to the Delphonics. That's good. Why I'm kind of rebranding the whole thing. And it's cool. It's not like it's you know, so much to do, but that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So, but dealing you guys, with the other groups.
Right. I was going to ask you, like, the other groups that, let's say, for instance, the groups that you are managing, if it's not the original member in the group, is that hard for you to book them?
Honestly, a lot of this business has to do with your reputation.
I see.
When I started the Soul One movement, as I call it, there are promoters that will damn near book the group sight unseen because they know I'm not going to send them no garbage.
Okay.
So how I started off with each of these acts, I mean, I would put them on as an opening act for my group, you know, to get them that that shine, as they say. In fact, that's how I, when I left Wilbert Hart's group, what I did was one of the little tricks that I did, because when I left, apparently calls were made, people was told not to deal with me. Do not take my phone calls. You know, people act like, you know, act like I was just invisible. So I said, okay, you know what? Let me think about this. And what I started doing, I started booking them myself. The same people that did not want to help a brother out and get me any bookings or look out for me, I would book them. And I would put myself on the show as the opening act.
Smart.
And 100% of them, they'll pick up the phone when you talk about a gig.
Mm-hmm.
These people wouldn't talk to you otherwise, wouldn't give you the time of day. But when you call up and say, hey, listen, I got a date for you, I can get you this much money, whatever, give me a call back. 2 minutes later, the phone is ringing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, what you got? What you got? They still didn't want to work with me, but guess what? And this is the thing with our people. Money, money. When you can pay them, if they don't like you, they still gonna work with you. And I wish any of these Negroes would call up right now and say what they gotta say, because the bottom line is they all work for money. You ain't gotta like me, but if I'm bringing you some business, come on and let's do it. And they cannot deny it. Now one of them can deny it. And if they do, call up now and call me on it. I still got flyers. I still got contracts. I still got everything. Okay?
I heard it from him first. Let me ask you a question. When you do the tribute to Delphonics, how many songs are you allowed to do?
Oh, I'm not. Well, I can sing any song I want.
Oh, okay.
Most of a lot of people don't know this either. I'm going to say this here. A lot of people know, but most of them I leased and bought into the mechanical rights for the songs to re-record them.
Smart.
I'm not playing. Smart. I know what I'm doing. I've been doing this a long time, and I have to cover myself because people don't want me to sing the song. Certain people don't want me to sing the song. So what you can do is re-record them, get the mechanical rights, and re-record it. Simple as that.
Well, you know, a lot of artists are getting their masters after so many years,
mm-hmm.
and they're re-recording them so that the record labels can't claim, you know, copyright or whatever. So
exactly.
You're basically doing exactly what many artists should do.
For a long time, I've been doing this. Long, long time.
So you had to learn the business and the music.
Well, yeah. You just got to learn. And sometimes, you know, you got to use your common sense with certain things. You know, you got to, you know, look at things and plan it out and plot it out and do what you got to do. You're not trying to do anything or hurt anybody or whatever the case may be, but this is business. And guess what? A lot of these groups right now, and yes, I'm gonna say it. If we, at these Black artists, don't start looking into, well, okay, I'm getting old. Let me figure out. Maybe remember that group back in the day, Menudo.
Yes.
Remember that they would. New members would come and go.
Recycle. Yeah.
You know, what's the guy? Ricky, whatever. He was in Menudo. All these guys was in, and they would recycle the group. Keep the name going. A lot of these guys don't understand that. If they would just sit down and think of it as a business and say, okay, let me start thinking about bringing a couple of younger guys in here to keep my brand going. A lot of these guys just don't want it to happen. They want the music to die right along with them. And it's unfortunate, but my whole thing is, this is what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to keep the music alive the way I know how to do it. It may not be the perfect way, but that's the way I do it.
Let me tell you, and I want to ask you this from a musician's point of view, and be as honest as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Where did the music industry go wrong with this music that's out now? Like,
I don't know if it went wrong, but
it went left.
It's just... Yeah, it went left. Yeah, there's not a lot of real music out here, but there is a lot of real music out here, but it's not getting the shine that this other music is getting. You understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. There are still a lot of artists out here actually going in the studio, playing their instruments and putting everything together. But the time it takes them to do that, there's people with a keyboard and a computer that can tap a few things, put a couple of samples together, and push the stuff out there quicker than real musicians. So it's about business. It's just as simple as that. It's about these record labels. They want to get a hold of a good product as fast as possible, get it out there so they can make their money. They're not interested in real musicians anymore. They're not interested in, you know, they're interested in making money. It's a business. So that's where it went wrong, in my opinion. But I wouldn't say it went wrong. Some of this music, I love. I ain't gonna lie to you. Listen, I'm not saying that it's bad. I'm just saying that there's so many talented people out here that don't get an opportunity to be seen by the world because they don't understand the technology. So they're still trying to do things. You know, there's guys... Like, for instance, I have a group. They're called, let me get it right, because I don't want no legal stuff. They're called Nights Like This, a tribute to the Dells.
Okay.
Two of the guys, if you go online right now and look, Subway Singers, two of those guys are in the group. Some of the baddest singers you want to know that I put in this group, because they're not computer savvy. They're not tech savvy. They don't understand this business. All they know how to do is sing. And so I'm trying to give them an opportunity to be seen. But I say all that to say, it's so many great singers out here, great musicians out here, but you have to not only be talented, you have to be tech savvy, know about the internet, know where to go, what you got to know. And a lot of them don't know.
I just want to play one of my favorite Delphonic songs and let you take a break, and we'll be right back.
Okay. Thank you. Is it playing?
Remember, I'm on, I'm editing all of things. I'm doing a radio show as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I got a radio show, podcast, and the TV show. So
You
I'm
see what
doing
I'm
all
saying?
simultaneously.
See, you one of the others that know about this stuff. See, you know.
40 years in computers.
See, you better know. Yeah, there you go. There you go.
After paying people that's supposed to know what they're doing, I had to learn it on my own. Even though I was doing TV before I got my degree, but it's very important to just be self-contained.
Yeah,
Very
that's what I
important.
wanted to tell you about anyway. Yeah, the stuff that I do, like, did you see my thing, Soul One After Dark?
You
Did
sent
you get
me
a chance to see?
something. Yeah, I did. I
Yeah,
did.
I decided during the pandemic, was nothing else going on, wasn't working, so I said, let me just try to mess around, found one of these, one of those things to put your show up and stuff, and so I learned it. Learn how to put the videos and stuff together on there, and it was cool, but it's a lot of work. It's a lot. Oh
Yeah,
my God.
it's a lot. It's a
Yeah.
lot. Even trying to get some of the music, it's so restricted now to get MP3s, and they put so many codes, so it's hard for you to download music. So
Yeah.
I had, I got to do my little tricks, record from my computers, send it to myself, then upload, download it. And then upload it to the studio. But
Yeah.
the one thing, I've been doing radio since 2009 online, so it comes easy to me. Now everybody's doing podcasts, and I've been doing this since 2009, and so and then the podcast, when I was in the hospital, I created that, and thank God, because now I'm on 8 platforms. So, and then I have sponsors. I charge a small fee and I promote their products, goods, and services. Same with the TV show. So, it works out. I use this as a vehicle also for authors. They want to promote their books. But a lot of comedians have become famous because of the pandemic. A
That's
lot
right.
of these comedians are out here and singers out here don't know anything about doing live shows, but they're superstars on the computer, and that may have been a blessing. That was the fantastic Delphonics with Hey Love. So we're going to continue our conversation with Mr. Greg Hill, and we're talking about technology. And how about the future of music? Where do you see it going?
Well, I see, a lot of good music coming. It depends on what you're looking for because it's just, you could find any type of music out here now. So it's, and I see a lot of people doing independent things and doing very well with it because if you, again, if you know the technology, if you know how to move around, on the internet and whatnot, you can make a whole lot of good things happen for yourself. And sometimes it's not the greatest music. It's just all about just hitting that right note in the fans' heads, and making that right impression with people that they'll follow you and they will support you. So,
Now, a lot of times people are confused about monetizing, and I like to tell a lot of younger people, they're under the impression that if they have so many followers or so many likes that they're going to make money. But you still got to put the work in. You know what I mean? You still got to put the work in, and just because somebody follows you and liked you, that don't mean they're spending money. So I tell, like, for instance, Orange Juice Jones, remember him?
Oh, yes.
His daughter, Perry, is a fantastic singer. Matter of fact, all eight of his kids are talented. And she has like a small 360 deal, right? And but I just feel that because she's so talented, she should have had like a major deal. But then again, I understand wanting to be independent. But she definitely qualifies for a major deal. And unfortunately, because of the internet, people are not supporting the way I feel they should be. But she's getting shows, which is good because that's the bread and butter. But I just feel like putting all of your music out, like for instance, the footage that I have being the first female host producer of any hip hop music video TV show from 85 on, I don't give my footage away. People have to like that for me. So I feel the same way with music. If you hear my music, you're going to hear like maybe 15, 20 seconds of it. Like a producer that I promote, I created his website. And he wanted me to put all his music up. I said, no, because if you put the music up, they're not going to buy it. We'll give them a little hint. And then I put the contract on the same page. And I said, this is a production agreement. If you want to download this music, read this, blah, 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 download it. You know, as you're downloading it, you're paying. Like, I just don't believe in giving a whole song or a whole video. And people are losing money. YouTube got people thinking that, you know, they're going to be rich. But if you don't do monetization, if you don't do affiliate links, you're not going to make any money. And if you have 10,000 likes, that doesn't mean you're going to get
$10,000. That's right.
So people really have to start really, really paying attention to ownership. Like you said, and being independent is the key. But if you don't know the components, like you said, technology. But other than technology, you got to have a team that's able to help you promote and be able to network with other people that's doing the same thing so you can barter. I get a lot of stuff done by bartering because some people may have more followers that will spend money. But I always put little links on everything, you know, that has something to do with pain. I've been doing that since the 80s, you know. But So what does the future look like for Greg Hill?
Well, what the future looks like for Greg Hill, I'm trying to get my Soul One brand, kind of spread it a little, get it out there a little bit more. And I'm kind of rebrand everything. And basically that's what it is. It's just a lot of work ahead of me, but this is what I love to do. So I'm going to get, when I say I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. And if I don't do it, it's because I tried like hell and it just didn't work at that time, but I'll be back. I'm going to do it again. But right now I'm just, you know, moving and grooving, trying to get ready to get back on the road. And, you know, people can go to my website.
What is it?
The website for the booking agency is Soul One Music, soul1music.com. And I have several websites. And the website directly for my group, Greg Hill Tribute to the Delphonics, is actually greghilltributetothedelphonics.com. Or if you don't want to do all that typing, you can just put in greghillmusic.com.
Okay.
Very simple.
Thank you, Greg, so much for joining me here at Celebrity Showcase.
Thank you for having me.
And all of you listeners out there that I didn't click on for you to speak, you'll get an opportunity. Just go to his website, buy some tickets to his shows, support him and what he's doing. And let's keep this music alive, Greg. Thank you so much for your contribution to the music industry. And I wish you nothing but more success.
Thank you. And thank you for having me. And I wish the same for you.
Thank you.
Been many years, many years.
Yes.
You got to talk behind the scenes.
Yes, we do. Thank you. Have a good one.
All right. You too. Bye-bye.
So that's the end of Celebrity Showcase TV. Just tune in every Wednesday on channel 56 and channel 1996 on Spectrum TV, RCN Cable, channel 83, Fios 34, and online simultaneously at MNN.org, Lifestyle Channel 2. That's every Wednesday at 6:30 to 7 p.m. Now, you can listen to this podcast also at anchor.fm/The Really Real Talk. And real is R-E-E-L. And we're on Spotify. We're on Apple Music. We're everywhere. We're on 8 platforms. I'm just fine. Okay? Once again, thank you. And thank you, Greg,
for giving us
history of your musical career. Bye now.
Okay. Bye-bye. Wait a minute, what is this? Okay. Wait a minute.